I did it. All right. Welcome, everybody. Vinny usually has the first word here, but Vinny's camera went on a little bit of a Halloween vacation this week. So he's here. You can hear him. Won't be seeing him tonight.
I'm here in everyone's imagination.
Everyone's imagination. No, but we're here. We had a lot of fun last week out in Yuma, Arizona. Huge thanks to everybody at Team Throttle Monster, and especially Mike Christensen for allowing us to do a live podcast at a monster truck event. But now we're back at home base. We have a very exciting guest here tonight. We've interviewed a lot of different people thus far. And this week we are still on the West Coast. We're just in a different country, right, Vinny?
Most definitely. You know, why don't you introduce our guest?
Our guest is a seasoned veteran. He's traveled many places competing in monster trucks and other functions of the monster truck business. He's most known for the Western Renegade. It is Barry Parkin.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Mr. Barry Parkin and Western
Outlaw, half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. Oh, she's a one of a kind. All my friends call me Bear Claw.
How are you, Barry? Welcome.
I'm good, Phil. Thank you very much for having me on tonight.
Well, it's our pleasure. We're very excited to hear your story. What's 2020 been like for you thus far?
Oh, it's been a roller coaster ride, just like for everybody else. I'm back working full time and just waiting for 2021 to come around so we can get the monster truck world back started and having some fun again.
Well, you know, talking about the monster truck world, you know, I start the podcast with this first question every week, and I got to ask, how did you get your start in motorsports?
I was just like probably everybody else. I was a kid playing in a sandbox for a long time with monster trucks and knew I wanted to be a monster truck driver and own my own truck. I did things a little differently though. I started off with a ride truck first and, kind of learned how to put the big tires on. First of all, it took me over 2 hours to put one tire on, the first time I tried. Now we got it cut down to about, 15 minutes by time and tires on. But anyhow, started with a ride truck, learned the functions of driving a big truck like that. The rear steer is the biggest thing to overcome. Kind of got my feet wet that way. Started doing some small shows with the ride truck, meeting some promoters. And then it was time for me to jump into a full blown race chassis.
So did anyone give you advice when you were starting off with the monster truck or the ride truck, that is?
Kind of. I mean, we got some seasoned veterans in Canada here. Jed Barkoff, he took me under his wing. Don Franca, she took me under his wing as well. And kind of gave me the ins and outs of what to do. And but it was a lot of trial by error. Even the first time setting shocks, or the first time I thought I set them properly, I hit a car, and almost knocked a filling out. Right. So obviously I didn't have my shock set up very well. So no, it was a learning process, and every show I got a little bit better, and some of the guys started, when I started doing some bigger events, some of the guys like Jimmy Creighton and pull me aside and give me some pointers. And Jim Kohler probably was the biggest guy I met to help me with my shocks and my shock technology. And then I wasn't afraid to fly high in the Renegade.
So when you jumped in with the ride truck, did you build that truck or did you get it from somebody else?
I bought the ride truck chassis from a fella here in Canada and kind of tweaked it, made it my own. And within 2 weeks, we were at our first show doing stuff, right? So.
Now, how long was it from when you had the ride truck to when you jumped ship to the race truck?
Within the first year, I knew I wanted to have it. I had the truck and basically the hauler set up, so I knew that was my game plan from day one. And when it was time, I found the chassis I wanted and started building it up. And then I had my first show, and away I went from there.
You know, was there any challenges you faced getting started, you know, competing with the monster truck, and how did you overcome those challenges?
Well, there were challenges every day with monster trucks. I mean, the monster trucks, anybody could tell you by looking at them, they can break. Challenges were of always finding spare parts to keep the truck going, having the money in the back and you get up and down the road without any sponsors. It was pretty hectic. Lots to overcome. Even coming to my first show, there was always different obstacles to jump over, drive over, and then how to put a good show on for the fans, right? So I was always the kind of driver that I wanted to, you know, give back to the fans. So after the show, I went up and I would sit with them and talk to them and answer their questions about the truck, right? So.
So when you jumped into the race truck, where'd you get the truck from and why did you choose that truck?
I looked around when I was looking for chassis back then. I mean, not a lot of people were building them like they do now. And not a lot of trucks were for sale. I looked around and hunted high and low. It was actually when I went down to the Monster Jam in Las Vegas, the World Finals. I met up with Craig Christensen and kind of had a look at his Dragon Slayer chassis. He had a couple of them. I kind of picked the one I wanted that would work for me. And we, you know, basically struck a deal. And I went down to the States and picked it up, brought it across the border. And then from there, we cut and chopped it and put excess tubing in. And because we knew we were gonna run it hard, right? So, it was. And Craig helped me out along the way. You know, give me expertise in the chassis. He'd watch videos and say, try doing this or try doing that with it. And it helped out.
So take me back to that first event in Western Renegade. Where was it and what was that experience like?
It was my first event was in Medicine Hat, Alberta here, just close to the border, the Canadian-US border. I thought I was setting the world on fire, just like every monster truck driver thinks he does when he hits the first set of cars. It hit hard, and I thought I put on a good show. I thought I flew through the air, and you know, watching the video after, I was just shaking my head and put my hands over my face. I couldn't watch. I was so embarrassed. It was very slow going in slow motion, and it just wasn't. I thought I was doing more behind the seat or behind the steering wheel than I was actually doing. And I was lucky that the crowd didn't throw popcorn at me that night. The next day, though, when I woke up, I was sore. I was bruised and sore. And I thought, well, maybe I might have done something right, you know. It was brutal. I've come a long way since then. I think I'd drive faster in a rental car than I did that night in a monster truck.
Working around here, we have some fan comments. We have Jason Courts in the comment here, driver of Roughneck. He says, after a long nights of wrenching, do you ever wish you listened to your crew members' advice in getting the job done sooner?
That's why Jason Court was fired as a crew chief. No, I'm just kidding. Jason was I had two top guys. Three top guys, but two top guys I would consider the best in the league, and now he's driving his own monster truck, and that'd be Jason Court. As an independent, you take a truck out there, and we spent some late nights working on the old Renegade truck. One night I remember we were doing a Monster Jam show, and I went out and hit the jump first. I was up freestyle, and it was too big of a jump for the speed I approached that. And I launched it pretty high, and I came down, and I broke one tire off. That was in the afternoon show. And Jason and Brendan quickly put the tire back on while I was signing autographs and getting ready for the night show. And we went back out for the night show, and I hit the jump. What I thought was a little softer, we got big air. We came down, ripped the other tire off the truck. And by the time I walked back to the pits and seen the guys, you know you're in trouble when they have their hands over their head, and they're kind of shaking their head and looking at the truck saying, it's going to be a long night. Why'd you do that, right? So, but Jason Court and Brendan were awesome, and I wish Jason all the best in his career at the Moss Trucks nowadays.
A question here from Levi Shones, and he says, how cool was it to have Western Renegade made as a diecast, and what places do you wish you could have taken Western Renegade?
It was pretty cool. I think when that whole deal came around with the Hot Wheels contract, I was pretty excited. I wanted a box of the toys from Hot Wheels for myself, right? At the time, Hot Wheels didn't know how well the truck would do or sell, so they kind of made a kind of limited edition. And within the first 3-4 months, they sold out, which means I couldn't even get a box. I couldn't even get a toy myself. And that kind of perked the ears up of Hot Wheels. So they mass produced the toy. And, I first seen a toy and I was in our Walmart. And, I was so excited that, I was jumping up and down. I wanted to buy all of them. I think there was like 4 or 6 of them on the shelf. And I wanted to buy all of them. And, my wife said, maybe hold back and let some other little kid buy some. You can take one right now, but hold off, right? So since then, we've got the Western Renegade toy. We've got the 124th edition. We've got the 164th edition. We've got toy sets made of Western Renegade. We got a video game with a truck in it now. So it's gone further than I thought ever would be. And what other places would I like to take the Renegade? It's still, we got some plans for it coming. If 2020 ever ends and 2021 comes around. I've been all through the United States. I was fortunate to travel with Monster Jam and other great promoters. Did the Monster Jam tour. Maybe further east in Canada, we had a chance to go with Bigfoot on the East Coast, several years ago, right? But it was just too far for me to travel because I had a tight deadline with shows already, right? So, anywhere I would take the Renegade for sure.
And make sure you guys are liking and sharing this podcast. Make sure as much people as possible jump in here and hang out with Barry with us here tonight. Barry, talk about those Monster Jam toys. It had been a really good feeling, like you mentioned. What was that experience like at your first Monster Jam event, and you're lined up against some of the biggest names in the business?
Oh, man. Like my first Monster Jam event, there was guys like Rod Schmidt with Gravedigger, who I followed and watched for several years. There was John Seesock, multi-world champion there. Top name drivers at my first Monster Jam show. And, my knees were shaking. All of a sudden, we pulled into the arena. you know, late at night, like we normally do. We travel, we work all day and travel all night to get to the show. We pulled in there and out of the truck, and there was the Shiny Gravedigger, which was my ultimate truck. I liked it from day one and still like it. You know, and as soon as we seen those other trucks parked there, it was pretty good. It was a feeling that I can't explain and probably never feel again. And then also, you know, sitting in the truck, once they announce your name and you climb in that seat and pull your seatbelts just a little bit tighter, you know, because the show is going to start and you look over and you see the guys you see on TV, the guys you grew up watching, they're sitting beside you and then they give you a thumbs up. But yeah, you know, Rod was awesome. I remember John Seesock, we had a shock problem, like third or fourth show in, into the weekend. And, John pulls up on a quad he, borrowed from a dealership that was in the back. They're all on display. Anyhow, John pulls up doing a wheelie past the Renegade truck because we had shock fluid flying all over. And John turns around, comes back, and gives me some advice and how to fix it and what to do. And then he took my son and they booted around the arena, the Mosh Jam arena, doing wheelies and stuff like that on a display that probably wasn't supposed to be in the dirt or never alone started. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
You might know who this guy is. It's Brandon Kowalczuk, and he wants to know, how many acres of grass did you get mowed after selling the trucks?
Well, this is an ongoing joke. They ever asked me, you know, what I would do after I retired or got out of Mom's trucks. I haven't found that yet, but I told Brennan that once I retire, I just want to stay home and cut my grass. The biggest thing is I would leave. You'd work all day, myself, my crew guys. Brennan would travel, you know, a good hour and a half, 2 hours just to my shop. And then hop in a semi and put up with me yapping and talking for another, you know, 4 to 6 hours or however far we had to go. But the running joke was is that I'd never have time to cut my grass. I got 10 acres of grass. And I would leave and I'd come back and my neighbors would yards would look all beautiful and, you know, pristine. And my grass looked like it was a jungle. Right. So I always said to him, I said, if I could retire, I'd just stay home and cut my grass. Right. So now I have that time and I built a pretty massive machine to cut my grass with. Right. So it doesn't take me very long anymore.
He also wants to know, are you a big Seahawks fan?
No. Long story short there, a Seahawks blanket kept me warm one night when I was when I needed it, and we'll leave it as that, but good one. Hey, by the way, we don't call Brandon by his real name. His name is Daisy. He is probably 6'4". And he probably weighs more than I do. And the only time I've really been scared is we were in a Walmart between, I don't even know where we were at, maybe down in the States or somewhere in Canada. And he was walking ahead of me and I hucked a sponge ball at him, like a little rubber ball at him. And it hit him directly. And he turned around for a big boy, he can run. But I ran faster scared, so I never did that again.
I'm sure you had a lot of fun with a lot of guys like Daisy up there in Canada. You know, there's obviously not as much trucks as there are in Canada compared to the United States. So there has to be a big sense of camaraderie between yourself and the other trucks up in Canada. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, there isn't a lot of trucks, or there wasn't a lot of trucks up here in Canada. Now there's a couple, right? There's, it looks like every time you go down a block, there's a ride truck in Canada now. But back then, you know, I made a business plan. I wanted to make money at this thing. I invested, you know, a lot of amount of my cash into the trucks, right? So that's why I went with the ride truck way first, because I wanted to make a good return. And once I made a good return on that, that's why I jumped into the race truck and it went all downhill from there. Back then, like I said, you know, Jed and Don, Marvin Anderson, You know, those guys are around. And as we started doing these mud bog events here in Canada in the summertime, you know, some of these events turned in pretty large shows. And, you know, I brought up Jimmy Creighton, his two trucks to a mud bog event, Terry Woodsock, the Twins I brought up to Canada, and, you know, several other trucks that, you know, promoters in Canada are looking for top line trucks. And, you know, I've made a phone call and struck a deal, and then the big teams in the U.S. showed up, and we had a good time.
So you've had the opportunity to drive a couple other trucks in your career, and one of the early ones was Jurassic Attack for Don Frankish. How did that come about, and what was that experience compared to driving Western Renegade?
Jurassic Attack is a cool truck. I mean, it is hands down a very cool truck. It is a very short wheelbase truck, and it will turn on a dime. It is very, very good in arenas. Hockey arenas, a lot of shows we do in the wintertime in Canada are in hockey arenas, so they're very tight. One of the first times I drove Jurassic Attack, I went over a set of cars, and it landed pretty hard, and knocked, you know, I believe something in the RI box, and the truck shut off, and I just looked, and I looked out the window, seen the big dinosaur horn on the hood, and I just thought, oh man, Frank is just going to kill me, because now the truck won't start. It was turning over, it wouldn't start. And anyhow, it ended up being an easy fix. And then we did a hockey arena for Chris Sorrell, Monster Spectacular, and ended up breaking an axle shaft in the rear, and the truck was pulling pretty hard to the right. You know, towards the dasher boards, or, you know, basically towards the barricades, right? So we needed the run. So they threw me in the left lane, and I think I was up against one of the Cretan trucks. And there was no dirt ramps, nothing like that. You're iron walling the cars. The cars were getting, you know, pretty well squished down. But when the light turned green, I mashed the throttle because I wanted to beat Cretan. And I darn near ran right into him, because it hooked up on one side. The other side that the axle was broken on gave way, and I came across at him sideways. But Don always had you know, good trucks. We always had a running bet. The race wasn't over when Don and I pulled up to the starting line. The race wasn't over at the finish line. The race ended whoever could make it to the trailer first of all. And we're doing one Monster Jam show. And I believe Don won the race, but what the crowd didn't see was we were racing back to the hauler. There was a little distance with a drive, and anyhow, Don lost the tire in the pits, and I darn near hit the tire and rolled. So yeah, that was a little spectacular. But there was Don always had good trucks, and when he got the call to drive one of them, I was honored.
We also have another fan question here from Levi Shones. This is a pretty interesting one. What's the worst city in Canada? I mean, that's got to be a tough question, but is there a city that maybe you enjoy more compared to some others?
I don't know. I'm in Canada, we're pretty easy going. We're pretty relaxed. You know, I'm probably going to go back to say that, you know, I'm a big Edmonton Oilers fan. So in Canada, hockey's a big, you know, big thing, right? So in Alberta, the province I live in Alberta, we have two NHL hockey teams. And Daisy's going to love this, because I'm going to say Calgary sucks because they have the Calgary Flames. And we despise Calgary Flames hockey team. And so I'm going to say Calgary.
I got to ask about Calgary. Have you ever been up to Grand Prairie, Alberta?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So we did some shows up in Grand Prairie. And let me tell you, it was wild. And Daisy can attend to this, the same with Jason. You think Florida has some mud bogs that are off the chart with some big trucks. You go up to that part of the world in Canada, and man, they have off the chart machines. And we just had this talk the other day, kind of, you know, asked where I would where was my best freestyle? Where did I enjoy going every year? And it was up in the Grand Prairie area. They made a big billboard sign of me. I was driving up there for a show, and here I am on a big signboard, bigger than my trailer. And I almost drove in the ditch as I seen. I couldn't believe it. They were so excited to see me, but I was more excited to see them. And but yeah, it was great. Grand Prairie up there, it was great. Great shows. We did probably 3-4 shows a year up there, and very close friends up there. I sold a lot of engines from my engine builder to a lot of the mud racers up there. Once they seen the Renegade run and how it sounded, all those boys wanted some big horsepower. So yeah, it's great times up there.
Got a question here from Jason Court, and he wants to know how much hair gel you use for each show.
Tell Jason Core it's probably time for his bedtime and he should be going to bed. No, tell Jason Core this is actually a wig, and I put it on before I do any podcasts or any TV interviews. So he's just jealous because when he goes on TV to talk about his truck, the lights off the camera shine pretty hard off his forehead. So he's just jealous that I got more hair than he does and I look better than he does.
Got another one here from Brandon Kowalchuk, and he wants to know, what was more stressful, scale houses or letting your crew run your trucks at a show?
Both. I almost fired both my crew guys. I let Jason and Brandon take my truck. I can't remember what I did. I was probably doing something more important. But I let those two clowns take my truck for a show, and Jason did an awesome show. Like he aired out the truck pretty good, and made the promoter and the fans happy. But those two guys almost got canned and never seen the light of a day at Monster Truck Show again. Once I got the truck back and I seen what they did to it. Scales, any Moss truck driver, any truck driver can tell you, and I'm no truck driver by any means, but scales scare the heck out of me. Because once they know that you got a Moss truck in the trailer and usually overweight over each axle, and you got, you know, 2 barrels of racing fuel, and, you know, they'll get out the ticket book and they'll start writing you up. So Moss truck shows were easy. Avoiding the scales or trying to avoid the scales and planning a route out to make sure that they weren't open. That was my main goal. You know, you can go do a monster show, do a flawless show. Crowd's happy. You're happy. A truck's one piece, load of the trailer. You know, take your paycheck home and run into a scale, and all of a sudden you end up owing money for the weekend. So scales definitely scared me. And I, to this day, when I see those flashing lights, you know, the hair stands up the back of my neck.
Brandon also said, drive home from Grand Prairie, and then you had to rush to the hospital 5 minutes after getting home.
That's right, yes. So that was a proud moment. You know, thanks Daisy, for bringing that, or remind me of that. My baby girl was born that weekend, and it was a good weekend. We had a very good sponsor that he came up to that show and brought his own personal airplane. And the reason why is that if I got the phone call, you know, Daisy and, or, you know, one of my other guys was going to jump in the seat and pilot the Western Renegade, and I was going to hop on an airplane and fly back to my home city and welcome my daughter. So, you know, he can attend to this. He was up in the stands with my cell phone. And if it rang, he was supposed to stop the show, do whatever he needed to do to get my attention and get me out of the truck. That was one of the first times that Elliot was up in Canada doing shows, right? So the promoter was on board. All the drivers were on board. It was the first time I was actually racing Bigfoot. So it was a lot of nerves that weekend. But anyway, long story short, is we did the show. It was awesome. Crowd loved it. I was happy that the crew guys were happy. Drove home. We made it to my shop. I thanked the boys up and down for what they did for me and parted ways. I went inside and I basically laid my head down on the pillow, and then my wife went into labor and my baby girl was born, right? So I think I even had you know, part of my monster truck stuff still on when I went to the hospital, which raised some questions. But yeah, it was, that was pretty spectacular. She waited for me to get to be born before waited for her to be born by the time I got back. So it was pretty special. And she's actually running around here today with one of my shirts on. She's my sidekick and my shadow, so I don't go anywhere without her.
So the Western Renegade is obviously the truck you're most known for. What was that process like, coming up with the name and the concept for the truck? I mean, you had the unique Hummer body to start off, but what was kind of some of the fine-tuning details to make sure that truck always stood out from everybody else?
Well, like I said, the Gravedigger was my favorite truck watching growing up, and even going to shows. You know, I was a fan long before I was even the driver. So sitting in the stands, you'd see these trucks that were very nice and clean and detailed and very bright colors. And I said, you know, if I ever get a chance to own my own truck, that's what I'm going to do. And I took pride in it. So the name I come up with, I was actually just driving down the road, and I wanted to be the Western themes. We live in Western Canada. And kind of just come up with a name. The first body concept, I don't know if anybody's seen it, but it didn't fly. I gave my ideas, my brainstorm to a graphic designer, and he didn't see my vision. And I ended up with a big Zorro on the side of it with a big neon cactus, and I didn't like it, didn't understand the design, but I had to run it. So I ran it for, you know, half the year. And then I met, you know, a very nice lady, Sweet Ride Signs and Graphics. And, you know, I thank her to this day. I walked in, I sat down in front of her. I said, I own a Moss truck. Here's what I'm thinking. And please, God, can you help me? And I showed her what the truck looked like. And I said, here's what I kind of want to do. And within a matter of 3 days, she called me back in and showed me a print. And I was like, that's it. You know, I want to tweak a couple of things, right? So we're always tweaking. Everybody was a little different on the Western Renegade, but she knocked out of the park. And once that body came around, and I added my flair to it, and all my bright colors on the chassis, and you know, that's when the Hot Wheels contract came knocking, and the video game came my way, and all that, right? So you know, we couldn't keep up or run with the big boys, but we were sure loud and shiny at the pit parties, right? So that helped me out tremendous.
Got a question here from Mr. Extreme, Kenny Mazak, and he wants to know, what is the wildest thing you've done in Western Renegade?
Wildest thing? I'll tell you this, one of the dumbest things I did. You know, I won racing on the event, and I thought it'd be pretty cool to do a victory donut. I've seen other drivers do victory donuts after the race. I ended up flipping the thing right over and wrecking the body. Daisy put a lot of work into getting that body back into shape for the next show. But I was hanging upside down in my hooker harness, my ISP seat. I was tighter than a pea in a pod in there, and I couldn't move. I was upside down. And, you know, Daisy being the big boy he is, he jammed himself to the window and looked at me and said, you know, what, you okay? What did you do? You know, why? And I said, well, I'm just trying to celebrate winning the race at a Mosh Jam show. So that was probably, I'll never forget that event or that moment when we, and when you own a $100,000 Mosh truck, the sound it makes when they flip back over the loader, you'll never forget that.
You had a unique opportunity very recently to go down to Australia and compete in the Extreme Monster Truck. How did that come about? What was that experience like going to another country far away to drive another truck?
That was pretty cool. That offer came away through the promoter down in Australia wanted Canadians versus the Australians. The year before, it was the U.S. boys versus the Australian guys, and so I was offered the gig to go down there. When we got landed in Australia, you know, we didn't know what trucks we were driving, and I was driving the promoter's Pride and Joy. It was his truck, all the top dollars went into this truck. It was spectacular. It was like taking, you know, it'd be like taking the president's you know, limo for a cruise and jumping it into the air 10, 15 feet. For me, it was different. He gave me a hard time. He says, if I put a scratch on that, I'm never going to be coming back to Australia again. So we took that truck out, and it's different because everything you normally see in a Mosh truck's on the opposite side. You know, so the rear steer in the Western Renegade truck, I have it on the right side. Most drivers do have it on the right side. You know, your two-speed Paraglide shifters on your right side. In Australia, everything's on your left side. So it took a little turn or a little driving around to kind of get a hang of that. But we took that truck out for media day, and that truck there, if you didn't hit the jump hard enough, if you just, you know, kind of aired it out, but didn't get very big air, it let you knew, you know, you felt it in the seat, or my tailbone did. So I swung around and I nailed the jump. And I remember closing my eyes and I just seen the beautiful Australian sky. I just closed my eyes and I thought, oh, this is going to hurt. But when it came down, it was like landing on a pillow. It was probably the softest truck I've ever driven in, and had a chance to fly high. And it ended up spitting a bearing in the motor. And so we lost some oil pressure. I didn't know this at the time, but after the media day, we took it back up to the pits. And I'm a guy with the equipment. I'm good with the equipment. So the promoter had me building the track. So I was down there running a big track hoe and a skid steer. And he come down in a golf cart and told me the news. And I won't tell you what he told me, but I thought I was packing my bags and going home right after media day, but he was just joking. And then during the show, it poured rain. I think it was the only day that rained in Australia. It was that day, and it poured rain, and we had some Chinese tires on that truck. And it was slow motion, light turned green, and we were just hammering on the throttle, and I think we were just going so slow. Freestyle, it was awesome. I ended up standing the truck right on this tailgate. Hit a car and flew up in the air and then landed right on the tailgate and got it stuck. And then again, I was watching or looking at the Australian night sky, the stars. And the first guy that came to my rescue was the boss, the guy that was not only the promoter but owned the truck. And he said, "Mr. Park, and that's it. You're done for the night." So it was pretty cool. I'd love to go back down there. And, you know, with my new venture, we might see some trucks down there. Even the Western Renegade might make a visit in Australia. We'll see how it goes with COVID. But yeah, it was pretty cool. I've been in a lot of cool places with Mosh trucks, and I'm very thankful for that. All over Canada, all through the United States, and you know, into U.S. So it's been pretty cool.
What was the biggest difference competing in Australian Monster Truck event compared to the events that you would run in North America?
The fans in Australia are bar none. I mean, I kind of know how Dennis Anderson or Tom Mentz would feel. The autograph lineup was huge, you know, and it was kind of spitting rain out, and there was probably a line, you know, a mile long. Fans just wanted to see the truck and meet the Canadian drivers, and it was cool. And for the weather conditions, the stands were packed. The show sold out a day and a half before the event, and it's a large venue. We're not talking about a little, you know, little small field with, you know, with 5,000 seats. We're talking a big soccer field venue, and it sold out, right? So. But there, I mean, they just knew us as the Canadian guys, and the trucks were probably more famous than we were ever were, right? Other than Jed Barkoff, he's pretty cool down there. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
So eventually came time that you sold Western Renegade and the operation. Why was that decision made to step out of full-time monster truck driving?
Couple things. One is that I see an opportunity. you know, there's more and more trucks that were entering the industry and, you know, doing shows for, you know, practically nothing, which you can't survive, right? So, again, I run my mom's truck like a business. And when the promoters are, you know, asking you to take a pay that, you know, barely covers your fuel. I had fuel on, you know, I had fuel. I had, you know, my crew guys pay. I had the pay for the Moss truck. You know, I felt it was time to take a step back. I thought there was more exciting things to go do. And I'm an inventor and a designer, right? So when it came time, I put the chassis just up for sale. I was going to plan on keeping everything else. You know, I still got more of the Western Ringed parts hidden somewhere in my shop, and a couple of fresh bodies ready to go on the truck. But it was just time to take a step back, you know, let the new guys in the industry take over and run their stuff. So that's why I kind of stepped back. I didn't retire. I didn't quit. I just went into hiding for a bit.
Make sure you guys are liking and sharing this podcast so everybody can hear Barry's story and chime in with their questions and memories. And as we kind of transition from the monster truck scene, you weren't out of the game. You were still at the events, but this time you had something different. You had the Robo Dragon. What was that process like, creating the Robo Dragon and bringing it to life?
Well, the Robo Dragon concept actually came, I was actually at an event, you know, and I was watching the Quad Wars during intermission as the trucks would cool down. It kind of gave us a little bit of a break to fix the trucks, to let the engines and everything cool down and kind of get us ready to go between racing and freestyle. So there was some side acts that were out. And I remember sitting in my truck, strapped in, helmet on, and I thought, geez, there's got to be something cool. There's got to be something cool that comes out. You know, and growing up watching monster trucks, I've always seen the big transformers that come out. I wanted something different. I wanted to showcase something that would attract the kids. And, you know, kind of designing and kind of going through the building steps of the Robo Dragon process. my neighbors, when they drive by, they usually will see some unique project sitting outside of my shop, or, you know, in my shop with my big door open, and they would pull in and look, and the Moss truck they got, you know, they got what I was doing. When I started putting the Robo Dragon together, a lot of people are scratching their head, but boy, they sure came around when I drove it out. My kids made some snowmen in the yard. It was late December, maybe early January, and there was some snowmen in my yard that the kids built. And I took Robo Dragon out, and I just developed a brand new flame system for it that burned hotter and that was more efficient. I didn't give off the big black fumes. And I took Robo Dragon out and showcased the kids. They looked at it, and then I ripped their snowman apart and melted one with the dragon. So, but yeah, that's how Robo Dragon kind of came around, and then it took off. It took off huge. I should have did that several years ago. They put me in a new direction of what I'm doing now. So,
a question here another question from Brandon. He wants to know, which did you hate more, breaking an axle and loading a truck, or damaging the body?
Terrible. I mean, that. The most dangerous part of Moss trucks is loading or unloading. The only injury I've had, other than bruising my tailbone, is I broke my little finger, and I was loading the darn tires out of the hauler. You know, you take a big 6 foot high tire that my ride truck tires weighed probably over 1,000 pounds. They were good cleated Goodyears. And I caught my finger between the Moss truck tire and the door, and down your skull, severed my finger off. But loading the trucks, boy, I mean, you don't know finesse until you're idling a 1,300 horsepower Moss truck into the trailer, at very low speeds, and you got, you know, maybe half an inch of clearance on each side of the hub before you're scratching the hubs up for your trailer, right? And loading trucks, I mean, let me tell you, in Canada it can get pretty cold here. I can't remember where we're going. We were doing a state show, and it was myself. I had the new Maniac truck with Trent Hickey. He was in my shop. We were getting ready to go. Him and I were going to do a Moss Jam show, and he was using my truck and trailer or tagging along with me. And, you know, it was darn near minus 30 outside, and it was dark. It was cold. And usually monster trucks in Canada, when we had a show, it usually stormed, and my crew guys can attend to this. Every time it would be beautiful up to the show, the moment we get the truck to the head of the yard, you know, it'd rain or snow, or the wind would be too hard or blow too hard. And anyhow, we loaded the trucks up in minus 30. I load the Renegade up truck first in my trailer. And we open and close the shop door. We had the heat going in the shop. It was nice and warm. As soon as you open the shop door and fired up a truck, the blower would suck so much air in, it would freeze. And the return spring was frozen. And it didn't allow the butterflies to close on a blower hat. So as I drove, you know, Trent's truck into my trailer, it was probably revving about, you know, 900 to 1,000 RPM. And inside of a small sea container or a small trailer, you know, you can blow eardrums out. So that's where Daisy was talking about loading the trucks. I broke an axle, hit the shot or my trailer door, and broke an axle on my truck. Didn't get to break it in front of fans. I broke it myself. So, but yeah, loading is dangerous. I tell any monster truck guy that's where, you know, putting the big tires on and using the jacks That's where you got to pay attention.
Another question here from Brandon. He wants to know which gave you the wildest ride in Provost, Renegade or Robo?
Well, the promoter in Provost, him and I had choice words after the event. And what he's meaning there is I actually flipped Robo Dragon on its side. Luckily, there was a speaker and a fence that kept the Robo Dragon from going right over. But it scared me. I mean, it was the first time I ever seen that thing kind of go over, and I was inside. It scared me pretty bad. And that weekend, Robo Dragon had to be at another event within 8 hours. So we were doing two events and driving back and forth between the events. We had maybe 3 hours of traveling time in between each show. So Robo Dragon had to stay pristine, had to stay clean, and it had to perform. And here I go, take it out, and I hit a dirt ridge that was not supposed to be there, and end up flipping over my toy. And that almost brought a tear to my eye. I don't like to see anything that I built, created, or put that much time into getting wrecked, right? So. Just like ripping the tire off Daisy and ripping the hood off the front of the Renegade truck. And I think I cried more than anybody else.
Well, I think it's that time of the hour. It's time for Explain That Photo. Rules are simple. We're going to bring a photo up on the screen and you just have to explain it. Phil, you got a photo for us?
I sure do. Here's the first picture.
See there, that's what I was talking about. I thought about that body. I had bigger visions than what it came out with. I wanted a stagecoach in all my designs, and when that body came out, I sat there for the longest time, scratched my head, saying, "What does Zorro have to do with a stagecoach? And why is there a big neon green cactus on the side of my monster truck?" I didn't get the body. The fans sure didn't get the body, and it didn't last very long. But that body is still hanging on my shop wall along my other bodies as well to remind me, you know, where I came from and what I started out with. But, yeah, it looked pretty good actually standing there. It didn't look that good in person, but, yeah, it looked pretty good there.
Here is our next photo.
Well, you know, in an interesting story about this picture is I actually found a guy on the internet that's making shower curtains with this picture on it right now. Wow. Yeah, and he's selling them for a big profit. So him and I are gonna have a talk sooner or later. This was at a show, I believe, that Bill Payne and his crew were there with Rockstar and all his 15 trucks. If anybody has been to a show with Bill or has raced with Bill, when you go to do wheelies, you're only allowed one or two hits. I went out, and this was an older car. I can't remember the make of it, but I remember walking by it, and it was an old classic car, and I was thinking, you know, that's a shame that I'm going to have to wreck that. So I wanted to hit that thing hard and fast. And I did. It set me up pretty high. But those, honestly, those landings, they're cool. You feel like you're flying in the truck with the ISP seat and on the Hans device and the hooker harness. You're strapped in there so tight. When that truck came down, I probably ripped the wheelie bar off. That was the biggest thing I replaced on that truck every weekend was wheelie bars. You know, Brendan was getting upset because every time I come back in from even doing an entrance, I ripped that wheelie bar off. But anyhow, I went out. I did two sky wheelies like that, basically planted that truck into the car vertically. As vertical as you can get a truck without going backwards. And then old Bill Payne goes out there, and to win the competition, he does, you know, 14 or 24 hits and basically runs out of alcohol and wins wheelie competition. That's where that picture came from.
Was that in Yorkton, Saskatoon?
That was in Yorkton, yeah. I won racing a night against Trent Hickey. I remember Trent taking out. There was a nice, pristine sign, a white sign. And we were told by the promoter, do not hit this sign. I don't care if you have to, you know, do 15 turns around this sign. You do not come near it. Do not hit it. And during the racing final, Trent came around, and he was eager to beat me. I was eager to beat him. And Trent wiped out this sign, and the boards flew all over. And I just remember looking at it and saying, you know, well, someone's going to be in trouble. And it ended up being we were all in trouble that night. We didn't listen, but that was a pretty cool night. And driving up to that show, like I say, every time we left the shop, either rain, snowed, or wind was blowing. We had massive floods that year, and driving to that show, a lot of the highways were washed out, and I'm sure we floated across some of the roads in the old freight shaker as the water was pretty high. But yeah, it was a wild weekend. I don't think we got much sleep that weekend. Like mostly, I broke all the stuff, but. It was good.
Vinny, you have one more picture?
Yeah, we got one more picture. And I believe the guy in this picture is in the comments. Phil, you want to bring that one up?
Let's bring it up.
Oh, Mr. Extreme. There was a cool cat. There's a cool cat that had a lot of fun with Kenny. When I started doing the shows, this was, I believe, in Salt Lake City or, you know, down south across the border. I went to the Skyler, who owns Live a Little Productions, great promoter. And I went to Skyler and I said, can we do something cool? I mean, you got a fire-breathing stuntman here that is off the chain. And I said, I want to take my dragon out there and let's have a fire breathing contest and let the fans vote. So I went out there as Robo Dragon and kind of portrayed the evil bad guy, if you and Kenny won over the fans' hearts. Kenny's a cool cat. You know, someday soon you're going to see him driving a monster truck. You know, I've talked to him lots and give him some pointers and. Kenny and his wife are awesome people, and I can't wait to get back down south to see him. But yeah, that was pretty cool. And you know that photo, when I'm in Robo Dragon, I forget that there's people in the stands that have paid to come watch me. I lose all focus, all time. I have fun in that thing. I go out there and I rip cars apart. In this, like this photo, Kenny and I are doing a contest. So Kenny would do fire breathing out of his mouth, which is really cool. I couldn't do that if I tried. And then I would, you know, of course, blow massive smoke and flames, blow a dragon, and chase him around the track, try to eat him. But I would lose, track of time. You know, and a lot of promoters would be standing on the track, either trying to wave me off, or they would actually just go to intermission as I'm still munching on the car. I had a lot of fun with that, with Robo Dragon, and you know, that night in Montana or in Salt Lake City was a special night. So,
another question. This is from Kenny himself, and he says, "What's the coolest thing you've ever done in Robo Dragon?"
I think beat Kenny in a fire breathing contest. I think that's the coolest thing I've ever done. You know, I honestly, coming from a mosh truck background where you got the big loud, you know, engine, the big tires, you know, the cool fire suit, you know, in the limelight, I didn't know how Robo Dragon would do. You know, one of my first couple of events down in the States, you know, after the show, I remember ripping his car apart, and I ripped the hood off the car. And as I drove off the track, I still had the hood in the mouth of the dragon. And I was kind of chomping on it, playing with it. And I drove off and parked it because I wanted to get out, kind of do a quick inspection of the dragon, make sure all the safety valves that I had incorporated in the dragon were turned off, that the flame system was off. And then I rushed my butt to the pits and kind of watched freestyle monster trucks, right? I was just a monster truck guy at heart. But there was kids, and I couldn't tell you how many. I mean, there was lots of kids in the stands down. They left their seats, and they were down by the edge of the fence, closer you can get to the track, and they all were pretending they were dragons. And I looked at these kids, and I thought, maybe they're doing a contest. Maybe the promoter was doing a contest, and, you know, they're trying to pretend that they were dragons or something. And I didn't realize it until one of the monster truck guys came over and said, "Hey, you know, you have something here. Look at the kids." And show after show, I got more of a following with the Robo Dragon. And kids wanted to see it come back to their town. You know, it was pretty spectacular. During the pit parties, I'd drive that thing out beside the monster trucks, you know, lift it up. And I'm a light guy. I got neon lights everywhere. Just, you know, ask my beautiful girlfriend here. I got lights everywhere. Anyhow, Robo Dragon would shine at night. It would just glow, and the kids would love it. And besides the monster trucks, I had probably one of the longest lineups for Robo Dragon, just people looking at it. So it was pretty cool. But I can't wait to go back down to the States and you know, start showcasting the dragon again.
I know you talked about Bill Payne quite a bit here tonight. Do you have any favorite Bill Payne memories?
There's lots, but I can't say those words over the podcast. Bill was good. He helped me a lot. My first 53-foot van trailer I bought from Bill. We had some issues with it trying to get it back across the border because Bill was doing some fancy paperwork, and that landed me in a lot of trouble. And I won't go into that story, but Bill was good. He sold me a lot of parts, and you know, and now he's got a fleet of monster trucks that run over U.S. and in Canada. He's in Canada a lot, you know, so it he does good, and he's a wild man. I wouldn't trust him to drive my rental car or my daily driver, that's for sure. I've seen how he drives. I let his wife, Laura, you know, she's a Canadian, I let her drive, but Bill's crazy when he starts a truck. Even the monster truck guys were getting up into this behind the safety barriers because he didn't know where he was going to land when he was done. Bill's the kind of guy that you drive your monster truck, when you park it, you leave it neutral. You don't put it in park because there's a good chance he's going to slide into your truck and roll it 15 feet. So you always left your truck in neutral when Bill was out freestyling after you.
a question here from Catherine Kenneshuck, and she wants to know, do you have any new monster creations in the making?
Yeah, I mean, we got some cool ideas. I actually built a large transformer that's in my shop right now that I built last year, and you know, just got busy campaigning Robo Dragon and up and down the road with other stuff. But yeah, I got a you know, almost like an Optimus Prime transformer that will stand, you know, upwards of 25 feet and lift a car up in the air and smash it, just like breaking a twig. So it's in my shop right now. When I was down in California last year, I had an awesome chance to run with the promoter. I met a very cool guy, and I think you've had him on before, Steve and his brother Rick. And Steve's a promoter. Rick is the guy behind the scenes, and I take my hat off to Rick any day. Anyhow, he kind of caught my eye on jet engines. And I was luckily enough to run a jet engine truck a couple times and do a car burn, and that really turned my head. So I went out, and I've got myself a jet engine. It's in my shop right now, and I got a very unique vehicle that's going in. So I'll have a couple of different things. You know, I got the transformer, I got a jet truck that I need to put together. And then I got a couple of aces in my back pocket that I've talked with Hot Wheels about building another creation, right? So we'll see how it goes and see where I end up.
So there was also a recent truck up there in Canada driving with the Western Renegade body. How did that partnership kind of work out to where Western Renegade was riding again for a little bit?
What happened there was my good friend Jed Barkoff. He actually got a very nice chassis from the States, and he had a show to go do, and his fiberglass body wasn't ready yet. Jed was telling me this, and we started talking back and forth. I said, you know what? If I was going to donate or lend my name, my trademark to anybody, it would be Jed. I just said, don't scratch the graphics. I need this for an upcoming gig that I'm going to be doing, right? So Jed came up to my shop, and we talked about him running my name, my logo, my image for a couple shows until he got his body ready to go. That was more or less just a buddy helping out a buddy. I give my shirt off to that guy. He was an awesome guy. Helped me out a lot with spare parts and advice and, you know, so anything I can do to help him or help repay him what I think, you know, owes, I do that. So, Jed ran the Western Renegade Hummer body, on his brand new chassis, for a couple shows and end up liking it, ran it for a couple more shows. Then some promoters kind of start calling me up saying, hey, Barry, you got a new chassis. Can you come to work and or do shows? And I said, no, but, here's the number of the Jed, and here's his new truck, and we went that way. So that was pretty cool to see the old Western Renegade out again without me actually being in the seat.
We got Steve Curcio in the comments, and he says,
Steve,
looking good. You can run my jet anytime. You're one cool dude. Hope to see you soon.
See, that there's the guy. You know, if I could work for Steve, I definitely would. It was pretty cool. You know, Steve phoned me up, this Canadian boy, and said, hey, we've seen what you can do. Would you like to come down and do a tour with me? And I was honored. So I went down and, you know, I camped and lived with Steve, right? We ate suppers together, and Steve would pick me up in his black Cadillac and take me to the Starbucks for coffee every morning. And like I said, Steve and Rick, Steve's got a beautiful wife. You know, he's a lucky man, and they were gracious to me. They took me into their wing, and I did several shows in California. That's kind of how I got my feet wet down there, and the opportunities came from that. But yeah, it was pretty cool. And then the night that Steve told me, he says, I was basically his guy to kind of keep things running, build a track. And his brother Rick, who I mentioned again, you know, But I want to, someday when I grow up, I'm going to be just like Rick. Rick's a pretty cool cat, and knows more about jet engines and how to get the crowd on her feet than I ever will. But anyhow, Steve looked at me and he says, you know, Barry, I want you to hop in there and see what Rick does. Not that, oh, cool, you know, I'll hop in there. But when that turbine starts spinning around, I know I've been a monster guy firing engines up and driving over school buses and vans, when you name it. But when a big jet engine spools up, and then all of a sudden you start hearing the burst of the flames come to the back, and that made me smile. And then Steve told me, he says, maybe next time I'll let you drive it. And I begged Steve up and down. I said, you know, that'd be cool to hop on a seat. Rick was there, but I was allowed to fire it up and play at the switches, and that was pretty cool. Those two guys they got some stories, and it's never a dull moment down there.
Speaking of Rick, he made a comment as well. He said, have Barry talk about the snowblower, log skidder, tree trimmer, tank he built for a commercial venture. Now he's a famous Canadian, and how much help he was working on our junk.
Well, what a lot of people don't know is I do several commercials and up here in Canada. So up in Canada, we have a big franchise store, much like an auto parts store down to your guys' world down south. And it's called Princess Auto. Long story short, early in my career, I was offered a short television show, anyhow, that got kind of fell through. We lost to a popular series called Ice Road Truckers. So my name was put on the back burner. Princess Auto was looking for a guy to, you know, kind of develop some machines. They didn't really know kind of what they wanted, but they kind of wanted the concept. They hired this marketing company. This marketing company hired this production company. Production company called me up. I was in Vancouver at the time doing a Monster Truck show. They said, hey, Barry, you're interested in this? We got this kind of, you know, this store that wants to build something. Are you interested? And I said, what's the store? And they said, Princess Auto. I said, yes, I'm in. I don't care what they want. I'm in. I'm the biggest Princess Auto guru there is. A lot of my RoboDragon is built from Princess Auto. So I know every nut and bolt and hydraulic component on their shelf. Even with Moss trucks, we'd pull into a town and we would Google where the next Princess Auto store was, because if the Renegade broke, 9 times out of 10, they would have the part, steering part or a ram or something, get the truck going again. So I fast forward a bit. I've done, you know, five commercials, one's in the works, but 5 commercials for them. The first commercial, they gave me a concept. They said, here's what we're thinking. What do you think? And I said, I don't like it. I don't get the concept. I don't like it. And the room went pretty quiet, and they asked me why. So I explained why to them, why I don't like it. And they said, what do you suggest? So I give them my vision. And since that moment, they've given me the green light. So they'll call me up. They'll say, we want to do a summer, winter, fall, whatever commercial. What do you think? And I will go and design something from scratch. With parts off their shelf to build wild extreme machines. So where Rick's coming with this is that I took a side-by-side and I built the giant scorpion that can rip trees apart and cut them and split them. I built a snowblower that's totally on tracks. I call it the magic carpet. You basically stand on this thing and control it with hydraulic levers, and they can throw snow about 25 feet in the air and kind of go through anything that's in its way. And we go back to the story about cutting grass. Princess Auto let me design a summer commercial. I said, I need a lawnmower. So I took I built a lawnmower with 6 chopping blades on it that spun, you know, I think it was 1,248 RPM. And this thing would cut down a tree. So I built my monster lawnmower that I could trim my yard with and do commercials. So long story short, I do side work just like a lot of Moss Truck guys do. Been fortunate enough that I got a shop and the ability to take ordinary projects and turn them into extremes. And that led me to the career of doing commercials, and it's very fun. And there's a lot more stuff coming down the pipe with that kind of work. So as soon as COVID lifts, everything will be back to normal.
So I got to ask, what do you enjoy more running, the monster truck or the robot?
A little bit of both, and I'll tell you why. The Moss truck, the fan interaction after the show, the autographs, the talk, and the seeing the people, that was cool. And when the truck didn't break and you actually did a good show, we didn't get stuck on a van or, you know, roll the truck or, you know, the truck stayed together and actually put a good show on, that was entertaining. But I don't know, taking a concept that no one kind of believed in or, you know, laughed at, to a full design where it drives out and everybody is taken back by it and then melting their eyebrows off as I blow fire at them. RoboDragon is cool. I think that's my niche. That's what I like doing. No one knows it's me. You know, people are surprised that there's actually a person inside. Everybody thinks it's a giant remote control. Let alone they don't know it's you know, it's a Western Renegade driver, right? Some track announcers, when they do interviews, they will announce it and people are like, what's he doing driving, you know, a giant dragon out instead of a monster truck? But it's cool. Ask Steve would be on the track trying to whistle me off, trying to get his ride truck out there to give rides, and I'll still be out there eating cars apart, having fun. So Steve's been out there with his Rolex on saying, hey partner, get off the track, it's time to get the ride truck out here. So it's pretty cool. I like doing that. And the next creation that I have, you know, designed, it's going to be spectacular. And some big promoters are looking at it saying, you know, when you get this thing built, they want to showcase it, right? So anything that I can build for the kids, because once you get the children and the kids involved, you won the hearts of the parents. They will go buy your T-shirts. They will go buy your hats. They'll go buy your toys. Because if their child wants it at a monster truck show, they'll spend their last dollar in their pocket, which is pretty cool to see kids wearing, you know, even a West Renegade T-shirt to a RoboDragon T-shirt, knowing that, hey, that's me. I created it with a lot of good people standing behind me and helped me out.
So as we're wrapping up the show tonight, I always ask this every episode, what advice do you have for someone wanting to get into the monster truck industry?
Go for it. It's a lot of work. I mean, you don't just show up at a show and unpack your truck and it's ready to go. For to be competitive and run, first of all, like I said, you got to win the hearts of the people that are actually buying a ticket. And that just takes a lot of personality. I did a lot of things with the fans to interact with them, you know, and I won a trophy or a plaque, or they give me a hat or a T-shirt to give away. You know, I made sure I ran up to the top tier of the arena to give it to that fan that was sitting in that $12 seat versus that $40 seat, like a lot of the other drivers do nowadays. I wanted to interact with people. I wanted to talk. I wanted to explain and answer all their questions. So the biggest advice I have is just do that. So when, you know, somebody comes up to you, you know, it could be a kid that's a teenager or, you know, a young kid asks you a question, you know, get down to their level and take your time and answer their question seriously, because you never know, they might be the next monster truck driver that might be, you know, tearing it down in this world, right? So give back to the people, answer their questions, take their time seriously, and give them a high five. That would be my best advice. Pay back to the people that buy the tickets that support you.
Got another fan question here from Riley Parkin, and it says, what was your biggest mechanical failure in Western Renegade?
Hiring Jason Court. Oh, hopefully he's not in bed and listen. That was my biggest mechanical failure, is hiring Jason Court. Daisy was good. He pulled his slack, but hiring Jason Court, boy, no, all seriousness, joking aside, Jason kept me running down the track and down the road, not only in the monster truck, but in my hauler, everything. Jason helped me out tremendously a lot, and I'll take my hat off to that guy any day. I just give him a hard time for him going bald, and I still got the hair. Engines, probably my biggest mechanical part that I my engine guy and I are very close and still close to this day. But that was his office, and when something went wrong or sounded wrong, I wasn't allowed to touch it. I was like almost like a Feld driver. I wasn't allowed to touch anything on that truck. And the only thing I couldn't touch was the engine. I could kind of diagnose it. I could pull the valve cover off and set my valves, do oil changes. But other than that, that was his baby. And he sponsored me, and he took really good care of me. So when something went wrong in that engine, it was 1-800, Precision Racing Engines helped me out, and a lot of diagnosing. I remember doing a show in Tacoma, and anybody knows Monster Jam, that's a long weekend. You're doing several shows in a very short time, two shows a day, and big track, big obstacles. We had a brand new engine in there, just put in the truck, kind of tuned it a bit, loading the trailer, and away I went to Tacoma to do this big Moss truck show, and it didn't work. It would quit and sputter, we found out it was a brand new coil of the box. It was just a weak coil that came from the manufacturer. But my engine guy was on a plane, and he came down to the show from Vancouver. Wasn't very far away, but he got down there, and we spent many of nights working on that thing, and we diagnosed it was a bad coil, and we went then, right? So the biggest thing, Riley, your dad, I know who you are, and know your dad. Your dad can fix anything. So if you get a monster truck, Riley, you keep your dad close to you. He's the guy that's going to be fixing it. But the engine was my biggest pet peeve, or that and breaking axles, I guess, with Daisy. But Daisy got pretty good at changing axles after me.
Well, Jason Court says you're the reason he's bald.
I probably am. Yeah, I put him through a lot of stress. No word of a lie. You'd be doing a freestyle, doing a Moss Jam freestyle, and you land, and your wheel is rolling, 10 feet ahead of you. And then also something else is breaking, and you hear it clunking, and the truck just dies. You look out through your visor, and there's Jason and Brendan, either shaking their head. Or if there was dead silence on the radio from Daisy or Brendan, you knew it was not going to be a good night. It was going to be a long, long night. So that means that no one got back to the hotel and no one got to the pool. Everybody stayed and worked. But a little bit of pizza and high fives, and the boys worked hard. So, again, I wouldn't be – Western Renegade would never be what it was or what it is today without those two guys. And we had some fun moments, some of the stuff I can't share over a podcast. But it's pretty cool with those guys. Those guys, we'd be going on the road talking about scale houses. I'd be in sleep in the bunk, and all of a sudden they would start slowing down. You hear the Drake, I'd wake up, and Jason and Brennan are looking for a logbook saying no scales open. I'd fly out of that bunk and be splat against that windshield saying, what can we do, boys? We got to get around the scale. And they would laugh and chuckle. The scale would be closed, but they would just want to get me out of bed.
Don't worry, Jason. You'll have your day on here. We'll be in touch.
You know what? Phil, you let me know when he's on, because I might shave my head and do an imitation of Mr. Jason Court.
I'll make sure we get it done. Don't you worry, guys. Another one of our past guests are in the comments. It's Dallas Glenn Rogers. He says, did we Dallas, get any sleep in Tacoma that weekend?
No, sir. So Dallas was a cool cat. Dallas, he emailed me and said, hey, I'm interested in Moss Trucks. Can I come help? I said, you bet you can. We need everybody we can. So I believe that trip was Brennan and myself. And Dallas showed up. And as soon as Dallas showed up and started working on a truck, you knew he was going to be a Monster Jam star. And he is. He's got you know, his truck is spectacular looking. It is detailed. The body's finesse on it. He's got the bright colors on there. Dallas, you're going to go places, buddy, just with that truck. Even with the standing still, it looks fast. When Dallas comes on, you have to ask him about signing a body part that I let him go sign. There was a nice, anyhow, it was a story to tell later on, but ask him about a body part he had to go sign the Western Renegade name to.
Oh, I'm sure I'll come up with Dallas in the future. Dallas is always a good supporter of the pod, so I'm sure he'll have a good answer for that.
Yeah, he's a good man.
Looking at another one of the comments here from Adam Nielsen. He says, I remember you losing all hydraulic hoses on Robo Dragon because it was so cold.
Oh, it was cold. We were doing a show, I believe, Adam, right in Nebraska. And there was a show that I worked all week, and I had to be down for the show. So I think I drove, like, nonstop from Canada all the way down to do this show. And Robo Dragon didn't break down very much. It wasn't like the Renegade. It kept running. And I bashed that thing. I'd rip things apart. We had a hydraulic hose inside the cab that busted loose because the hydraulic oil was so cold coming from Canada and then being an open bed trailer traveling down. Anyhow, when it broke, it sprayed me inside with hydraulic oil. I did the show, but the Dragon, it limped a bit, but it completed the show. But when I got out, I'm sure I could slide 50 feet on my stomach. I was covering hydraulic oil pretty good. But that's the only time RoboDragon broke. It was knock on wood. It's been good. So I carry spare hoses that length with me all the time now. Knock on wood, it's been good.
I tell you, Barry, we've heard quite the story here tonight. And if anybody's jumping in a little later, make sure you catch the replay in our archives in case you missed some of the questions. But you've accomplished a lot. You're still active in the business, and I know you have big plans in the future. And I always ask this question to end the show, so I'll make this our last question. When it's all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
I want my legacy to be, you know, here was a guy that came from nothing, you know, had a truck that was, you know, an old truck that we took and made it famous one more time. I want the people when they hear my name to associate it back with the Renegade truck, and you know, I want kids like this to keep on smiling when they hear the Renegade name. Me, I mean, I could fade away in the dust, you know, let guys like Jason Court and Dallas take over now and let them be the superstars, right? But my creations, I want them to live on, and I want the kids, my kids, to keep on building stuff. This one right here is probably one of the best welders I had. I can break something and, you know, she's 6 years old. She's got a welding helmet. She can go out there and probably lay a better bead than Jason Court.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think she may have stolen the show there, Barry. She's been in the background there for quite a bit and definitely one to remember.
Yeah. She's wearing a Robo Dragon t-shirt tonight. So, it's between a Western Renegade and a Robo Dragon shirt. She doesn't go very far. And she represents pretty good. So.
That's what it's all about. Vinny, you have any final words?
Thank you very much for having me on. This has been cool. Absolutely. You know, like since I built the Robo Dragon, I've been out of the limelight and just doing my thing, right? So a lot of good people. Jason Court, you know, Brendan, Adam, Dallas, Steve, and Rick. You know, all great guys, and I'm very proud to call them my friends. And, you know, Phil, you do an awesome job. You and Vincent, you know, guys like me, Monstruck guys, we tune in and watch you weekly. You know, so keep doing what you're doing. You are putting, you know, Monstruck back on the limelight. And during COVID, where we need things to be more excited, you guys are doing it. So hats off to you. Keep doing it. Have some interesting guests on, and need to get Rick on there. He'll talk more than Steve. He'll take up the whole show. And then get Jason Court. Just make sure you get the lights turned down so that you don't get no glare off the forehead.
Oh my goodness. Barry, It's been a pleasure having you on here. I know Vincent would say the same. It's great. You're our first Canadian guest. I know you won't be our last, and especially when we do get Jason on here, we will definitely let you know, and I'm sure it'll be one not
yet. Oh, boy.
You betcha. Oh,
thank you very much, Barry. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Well, Vinny, I know we can't see you, but I'm sure we saw a lot of Barry and his daughter there, and great story from Barry. He's very he has a lot of dynamics in his career, whether being the driver of the Western Renegade or now being the operator of Robo Dragon. He's not done. He still has a lot more projects he's working on, and it's going to be great to see where the next chapter takes him in the business.
I definitely agree. You know, he's our, like you said, our first Canadian guest. And, you know, we're not done with the Canadian drivers. We're going to, like we said, Jason, if you're still listening, we're going to have you on at some point. We're going to get the whole Canadian crew on, and it's going to be awesome. We're, you know, covering the West, Monster Trucks on the West far and wide, and Canada counts too.
Yeah, they count, especially when you have the Western Renegade on the Monster Truck Outlaw of the West podcast. It all just blends in perfectly.
Perfect fit for the show tonight, definitely. And I mean, you know, he had one of the unique trucks in the business, and hearing his story was really entertaining. Although absolutely. No one can see me.
And we can't see you, but we can hear you loud and clear. It was another great episode, another one for the archives. If you want to hear some more past episodes, I know we got Dallas Gunn Rogers in the comments. You can check his episode as well as all of our other guests in our video archives. You can go on our Facebook page. Click that video tab and find that album, live podcast episodes. You can see all of our past guests.
Yep.
You can check out our – go ahead.
Another thing I want to mention, if you have someone you want to be on the show, you can send a message to our page, and we will write them down the list.
Well, have your people talk to our people, like we say. But with that said, it's not – always done here. You can always find us on our audio only feed if you're listening to us audio only. So if you are one of those guests that want to be part of our video show, you also will be part of our audio feeds as well. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Anywhere that we have a new one, radio.com. We are on radio.com. We are anywhere you can hear sound at this point. So wherever you're on the road, you're in the gym, you're at work slacking off, however you're listening to the podcast, you're watching involved. You can also check our video replays up on our YouTube channel if you can't get on Facebook.
If there's a platform we're not on, make sure you mention it, and we'll get ourselves on there because we're everywhere.
And as Vinny said, we have a lot more guests planned. So that's why if you want on, send us a message. We'll make sure you're in the queue. We have a couple people trying to work on scheduling. We have a lot of great stories to tell here. And we're not slowing down, especially as we continue on here, the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast. It's another great episode. It's in the books. And we'll see you here next week. Now, I know we're changing clocks next week. We still plan on coming on here at our normal time, 6 p.m. Pacific. So make sure you have your clocks changed because we're not changing with them. Be here 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time next week for another great episode.